And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 117. I'm your host, Silas Lindenstein, and with me today, filling in for a under the weather Samantha Rund, we have a special guest. You've heard her before. She's been here co-hosting. Nicole Santora. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm here.
I'm flying blind here. Thank you. Thanks, Nicole, for coming in today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Hopefully, you know, it was great that you were available last minute.
Oh, yeah. I just love how we're such a like celebrity driven culture that like we already have a predetermined script. Thanks for having me. As if like this is the fucking Today Show. I'm like, where did I get that from?
I think maybe it's just you grew up right.
I was raised right.
You're raised right.
On the Today Show.
Yeah. thank you, fans, for tuning into Seattle's longest running comedy podcast. Probably. Today, we have a good friend. She's been here. She was on the Black and a Half live from Laughs Comedy Club episode. Ronnie Weatherby. She was here. But on the other show, she was here by her alias, Champagne Honeybee, which rhymes. I was just realizing this episode. Yeah.
Oh, and that's not on purpose?
No.
That's great.
You're like, this sounds right. I don't know why, but it just sounds right.
She is a talented Seattle-based musician focusing on she's a vocalist and ukulele player. And a fabulous person, as you're going to discover in this podcast. She's been on the Calcutta Times. I mean, that's right there. Right there. What more can you ask for? I can't. So today we chat a little bit about things that we've accomplished during COVID. I guess, actually, we never got to you, Nicole, on that.
I didn't accomplish anything.
You haven't? You didn't learn a new art?
Learn nothing.
Learn no new arts. Okay.
Nothing.
I've been gardening. That's my thing.
Yeah.
Not gardening. Landscaping and house painting. That's what I've been doing. We talked about that. We got the origin story from Champagne Honeybee here. And then she did the world famous 7 questions. And so it is a fun episode. And as you may have remembered from last podcast episode, I moved the movie reviews are now appearing on a separate podcast. So just to give you a preview of those, on the next, drop it on episode number 118, which will be dropping like tomorrow, like Thursday. I've got reviews of the new film Chemical Hearts from Amazon Prime, focusing on there. And from Netflix, a new movie dropped there called, it says 1BR, but it stands for One Bedroom. And that is a horror thriller. And also be covering the series pilot for Lovecraft Country. Have you seen that, Nicole? Lovecraft
Country? Not yet. It looks scary. I don't know.
It
looks good.
Yeah.
It is.
Is it good? Yeah.
Oh, you've seen it?
Yes.
Oh, I've only seen the first episode because I didn't realize that it started already. But I'm very looking forward to this series. So you can listen to that episode to hear my full take on it. We're doing. And so here we are, everybody. Big thanks to our Patreon Inner Circle members, Tara Widener, Stefan Ward, and Keith Nagel. Thank you for being a supporter of Black and a Half. And of course, if you want to support Black and a Half, you can go to patreon.com/blackandahalf. And just starting at $1 a month, you can join the League of Extraordinary Listeners. Yeah, you get a title for just $1 a month. and you know, help support this program, the show. And then of course, other ways to support it, you can just if you can go to Apple Podcast, it's not iTunes anymore, Apple Podcast, and leave a review. Leave a review and leave a comment. That really helps boost us up in the rankings there. So, you know, leave a 5-star review, leave a comment, and then of course share with your friends. That's it. That's all you can do. But hey, it was wonderful having you two on. But here we go. Take a listen. Episode 117, Black and a Half, with Ronnie Weatherby.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by, stand by, stand by, stand by. Join us. Impressive. Join us. Impressive.
I just want to say my favorite from yesterday was the woman whose mom immigrated from Puerto Rico.
Is she the one everyone's memeing about?
Maybe today? Because she's not, you don't immigrate from one of our territories. It's just moving from there. You don't immigrate. You're not an immigrant.
Well, I mean, a lot of the minorities that they have, you know, you have to have a lot of self-hate and a lack of facts and information. Yeah. Self-hate are kind of all wrapped up in what you have to be.
I miss Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice, because even though I disagreed with their take on life and philosophy, it at least came from, you know, at least they came from money. So that you, like, you understood, like, okay, you just grew up in a different environment. So right. you don't see things that much. But a lot of these other folks just straight up sold out. Like, they're from places and they know. They just like, nah, I'm just going to deny it because it's going to get me, I'm going to get more Twitter hits.
Willful, like, ignorance.
Like, if either of you became outspoken Republican, like, that, you would get so much press. You can get on TV so much easier as a minority speaking out.
Can you imagine, like, doing all of that and selling out and then, like, not getting any press? Yeah. And just being like, oh no.
You know, Rush Limbaugh started his career in a liberal radio station.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And then they were switching formats and going to a conservative. And he said, oh, I can do that. He had no skin in the game. He didn't care. He really didn't care. He just wanted a job.
Right. I think as long as you can do something that's fear-based, I think you get a bigger audience than you do where it's like hope-based or whatever. Yeah. Right.
That's a good point. And yeah, I have no desire to become like the Indian Candace Owens or anything. That's just not my life goal.
Are people that immigrate from India, is there a stereotype as to where they would lean? Or is it like, are they often left leaning, or are they more right leaning? Typically.
I have to be 100% honest. I don't know. And I guess we'll get into this later, but I'm adopted. So I didn't grow up Indian family or even really around a lot of Indian people. But I was surprised when a friend of mine who lives in Dearborn, Michigan, you know, with a high Middle Eastern population, said that a lot of her Muslim family members were all voting for Trump in the last election because she said it was because of the anti-abortion element of the Republican Party. And that was single, like, the main reason.
Single issue voters.
I know. I was like, that is just so misguided to me. Like, I just feel that way. Confusing. You know, because
Like they will, like he would gladly have them tossed out of the country, but, mm-hmm. but he theoretically is anti-abortion.
It's so weird because it's like,
theoretically.
Yeah. Like I had this thought the other day. It's like, I really wish like the Democrats would just, or even Joe Biden would just pretend to be anti-abortion for a few months.
Just to get,
if that's literally the holdout for you, then by all means, let's,
he would be, you know, like the thing is, if people try to bring up his flip-flopping and they go, well, are you really pro-choice because you did have this? Then they that might actually go, oh, for some people, maybe he's not really that pro-choice. Maybe right. I will vote for him.
Right.
Like,
I don't know. I feel like that can't come from Joe Biden's campaign. It has to come from somebody from the outside. So maybe we can even do that.
They're trying to hurt him. In but theory, actually
but like, yeah, maybe we should do that. We should just launch a couple of video clips, like edit them together where he's like pro-life. And then like, hey, I don't I don't know. Maybe
he voted on a napkin in 1983.
Right.
At an A&W.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So it must be true.
Must be true.
Mm.
But I do like he does. You know what? He reminds me of family. Right. Because he says things that he shouldn't say sometimes. Like, no, don't say, no, that's not okay. Don't, I love you. Don't say that. Okay. No, you're not there. You're not there. You haven't got, you're not, we're not that close. Just,
yeah.
No. It's like, no, I'm hip, man. Like, no, right. No, you're not.
And then he's just like, he's literally got some sort of something going on. That's not like,
he's 78. That's what he's got going on.
Right. I couldn't run for president at 78. Like I know this about myself now. Like
I was
43
and I started forgetting names of other comics that I needed to introduce. And I'd sit up there and just talk slowly or say, hey, and give it up to the wait staff real quick. And I'm like, I know this person. We talk all the time. How am I blanking? And then I'm like, oh, Manny Martin, come on up.
Oh, you know, no. Like,
I just forgot about Manny.
People that I know, and I'm like, I was freaking out for a little bit because there was like the six month period that I felt I was forgetting everything on stage, just blanking names, and I'm like, I have dementia.
Yeah, I think, it's happening.
I think it was just children, but it was. No, it felt like,
yeah, it's coming.
It's coming.
It's coming for all of us. I mean, like, that's why I'm like, I don't really even like to make jokes about it, but it's like clear that something's going on with
me. I've used deodorant way too long, even though they said, oh, aluminum's going to hurt you. I'm like, no,
I don't want to stink. Right.
I drink it in soda. So, well, you know what? Just let it come.
Neo cancer.
All right. I don't know.
Some people only listen to the show, but you know, we're new to putting up online videos, but I am now way more self-conscious about my race now because I look so light skinned in this. And now I'm getting why people didn't believe me when I'm like doing stand up and there's bright lights on me. And I'm like, so I'm black. And they're like, what? And I'm like, oh, now I can see myself on Zoom.
Well, like, I mean, what? Okay. So what have you gotten like in terms of what race you are?
Oh, Indian a lot, Middle Eastern.
Yeah.
Spanish. Sometimes under the light, like when I've done like theaters where it's bright lights, people are like, I thought you were a white dude just walking on stage. Like,
really? In the winter, I suspect.
Probably in the winter and the bright lights. I mean, I'm looking at this now. I'm looking at myself in this light and I was like, yeah, I'm pretty light skinned with the light on. I'm like, this is actually rather, my lights are horrible. I need to fix my lights because I'm like, I have no pigment
according to my lights. I'm definitely a few shades darker now than I was.
Let me do the brown
in the wintertime. I mean, in the wintertime I'm a few shades lighter than this for sure. Like my makeup barely matches my skin at the moment. So
yeah. I have two shades. I definitely have my winter shade and my summer shade and the makeup, you know? Yeah.
Look at that. I'm more of the color of my paneling now.
You're literally blending into the background. Like, Simon, did you know?
That's why I can't do the green screen, because I just blend blends me in.
Let's see. It started to take out my face, even though I'm the same color.
It was so weird. Yeah.
It's getting the little highlights, the slightly.
Yeah.
Is this the podcast now?
Yeah, we're going. This is part of it. I told you we're recording.
We just ramble.
We just start. We go into it. It's on happening? That outline. I gave you the outline. It says
ramble for 15 minutes.
Intro story.
See, look, I forgot that part of the outline.
We're
I remember
so casual here. Look.
Okay.
But I do want to get it. Okay. Between race wars and everyone getting shot, I was like, I need a happy topic to talk about.
Yeah.
Like, what? Because also, if I just keep talking about police shootings on there, people aren't going to know which one.
They're know.
Like, is this an old one or is this a current one? Which in a year they'd be like, oh, this is a new episode. So I need to break it up. So I like this story about learning in COVID, this uncle building his nephew a roller coaster in the backyard.
Oh, that's sweet.
Okay. I did not actually check that out. Tell me all about it.
Okay, so this is in Wales. Like the nephew is a super like into trains, like way into trains. And for some reason, I feel like when you're in the UK, Wales, when you're really into it doesn't seem as weird as someone here. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think they're a little off if they're here. But like they built a train track out of like a bunch of wood and stuff, and this huge train in the backyard. They didn't know how; they just kind of figured it out, and and they drew like based off of his drawings. Like he sketched out, what I would do, and they went and built it because of COVID. So he only has it because of COVID,
right?
I mean, between that and the Obamas teaching their kids how to play spades. Mm-hmm. During the COVID, I was wondering, like, what have you all learned anything during the quarantine? Have you upped your game on anything? Have you done anything exciting?
I actually have kind of a new hobby.
Yeah.
It's a very old hobby that has come back.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember in the 80s, a very popular craft were the Shrinky Dinks. Do you remember those?
Shrinky Dinks, yeah.
Where you would color, some of them would come like almost like a coloring book, like a sheet with a design already on it, and you would just color it in on this thin plastic. You'd cut it out, put it in the oven, and it would shrink down to about a fifth of its size.
Oh,
like nine times the thickness. So you could make like keychains, charms, jewelry. Yeah. So I have actually gotten back into the Shrinky Dink game. You know, apparently it's all the rage on Etsy and with crafting.
Really?
Yeah, but I got the idea to do it because I think I it really stemmed from me wanting to make some gifts with my 3-year-old niece. Because, you know, let's face it, toddler art, well, you know. I don't know, Nicole, if you have any little kids, but their artwork, I mean, how much of it can you really save?
Oh, like, not much.
You save every single piece. And so
I save everything.
Oh, of course you do.
You laminate it all.
Laminate. Yeah. Just
but my sister's birthday was coming, and I wanted to find a way for my niece to make her something that not only would she be able to keep, but that she'd be able to use. Because, I mean, my niece has done all of the, you know, paint on a mug, paint on an ornament, all that kind of stuff. She's like done like the whole store, like copy mine. She's done the whole inventory basically. So I just had this idea to have her do, you know, what toddlers do, kind of the scribbles, but turn them into a pair of earrings.
Yeah.
And so I invested, y'all. I got the sheets. I got the permanent markers. I got the jewelry findings. I got the like hole punch that would make a big enough circle to shrink it down to earring size. I mean, I don't know how much money I invested to make this happen.
You could have gotten a real piece of jewelry in the process. Yeah.
I mean, gift boxes. Shoot. I ordered.
It wouldn't be of a line. That's a horse.
Here's the thing. Gift boxes. Here's the thing though. I am so into it. I've made so 3 pairs of earrings for myself. I'm planning to make some as gifts also. So not only were my niece's earrings a huge hit, my sister loved them. And they were really beautiful, actually, because, you know, when you shrink down the designs, they look very sharp and very intense. So even if it's a doodle, it looks really gorgeous.
It looks purposeful, right?
It does. It really does. Yeah. It looks like, you know, modern art.
Yeah.
So
my daughter's my 4-year-old's really into drawing pictures for us.
Oh, yeah.
She wants to keep. And if you don't, like, if she sees it, like, on the floor later, she's like, Daddy, Daddy, why is that on the floor?
Right.
And I'm like, because I didn't get to the recycling. I don't know. Like, no, I don't say that. I was like, she doesn't think about it if it's gone.
Right. But if she doesn't not see at all. It, out of sight, out of mind. But if she, they see it.
Take care of it. You got to take care of that.
Where's the reverence?
Well, no, it's kind of like their love language. They can't do a whole lot at that age. You know, they can't buy you a present. So, you know, yeah, I made you this drawing.
Yeah.
You're like, what is it? Yeah. Like, it's a sunset. Well, why is it all green?
It's so good. It's so good.
I know.
It's so good. I just, I say that so much to her. That is so good.
Right.
But I have to, because she's really, Willow is super generous. Like in, like if I've washed some dishes, I got some, she comes in and she goes, Daddy, you've done a really good job. Like about anything, or like out in the garden, if she sees I did something, she's like, Daddy, good job with that. Like, oh, this this is her mom's influence. It must be because, like, she's always patting me on the back for stuff. I'm like, I feel so good around you. Like, I accomplished it. This is great.
I mean, well, does it encourage you to keep doing those things when you have such positive feedback?
Maybe. I do. It's more like I just like her. I like her complimenting me more than I like the task. You know, but she's like, no, I feel like I can do almost anything. And she's going to go, oh, you've done a great job in here, Dad. it's pretty adorable.
Oh, my gosh. That reminds me of like
four and five.
They can be really sweet. Yeah. And I feel like that reminds me of like this Montessori, but not Montessori school that we sent our now 5-year-old to. And they did this whole thing about like, you don't ever want to say good job, because eventually they'll think it's A, condescending, and B, this is the best that I can do. You want to say, wow, you've really worked hard on that. And I just find I default to good job. I never am able to get there.
That seems weird.
I know, it's right. It seems like a mind game. Like,
though, I will say when you
tried really hard. Can you imagine?
I don't know what's because that kind of sounds condescending, don't you?
Right?
You tried really hard means you failed. That means I don't like it.
Right.
But I appreciate your effort.
Exactly.
Like when my mother-in-law tells me, I will say when she says good job, I'm like, no, you don't mean that. You don't mean that. You said that to any, I'm not done. That's the problem. I hate, sometimes people are trying to be so complimentary to get on your side. They'll tell you like, oh, it smells delicious. And you're like, I just washed the pan. Like it's not even cooking.
There's nothing in here.
I don't like when people say, oh my gosh, this looks so good. This looks amazing. And I'm like, you haven't, or they're like, thank you for the great meal. Like you haven't eaten it yet. It could be crap. Right. I oversalted it. Right. Try it and then tell me. Because I'm like, I don't believe you. I believe you.
Yeah.
Too many compliments right away.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
My thing is I get really, if I'm satisfied with my own work, then I feel pretty good. But like, that's rare. Like I'm rarely, I'm really like, yeah, this is really good.
Okay, so. Angelica.
Oh, it was a Hamilton joke. Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
Every show I gotta throw in a Hamilton now. That's my running gag.
I might not get all of them because I only watched it once. So I don't know if I caught every.
Oh, you don't have children?
No, I do not. We have my niece. So
I listen to it.
Like I've watched Moana many times.
My 2-year-old now cries if I don't play Hamilton.
Really?
Unshot. Hamilton, Hamilton. So it's one shot, Hamilton. It's the thing that makes him happy now. Like if he's grumpy and like, I'm like, do you want me to play Hamilton? He goes, Hamilton.
Wow.
And like, he gets excited and we play it and he stares on the Alexa show that we have. I said the word. It's going to be waiting for me now to give orders. It shows the lyrics run while it's playing. So he stares and watches it. And I think that's how he's going to learn to read.
Mm-hmm.
From him. Yeah.
Now, does he pay attention like for the whole thing? Because to be honest, it's pretty long to watch all in one sitting. Or does he just like certain songs?
He will sit there and stare at the screen for probably 30, 40 minutes if I don't distract him, just watching and listening.
Wow. And,
or he won't go far from it. Like he'll sit down there. He just wants to be near it.
Oh.
Then I'll try to play it sometimes in the living rooms because that's in the kitchen to get him over somewhere near toys. So he'll play with something because he just wants to sit there and listen to music. You know, I don't know. Musician?
Maybe. I mean, my son definitely liked to focus in on numbers and letters and was an early reader. So,
yeah. Right. Ronnie, you're a musician.
Correct.
Were you always like from a little kid,
mm-hmm.
like a music connoisseur?
Absolutely. And I owe a lot of that to the Muppet Show. Like the original Muppet Show, my mom, gosh, I don't know how many videotapes we have, but my mom used to record the episodes off of TV. So I understand the repetitive thing. I would watch the same episodes over and over and over again. And my favorite ones were Gladys Knight. She was kind of like my first female singer hero.
I know that one.
Paul Simon. And then, y'all, the end all be all. Was 70s Elton John.
Oh, that's a good.
The feathers, the rhinestones, the chest hair. I mean, I was 3 years old, and I was so in love with skinny, nerdy kid Elton John that imagine my surprise, because this was actually in the mid 80s. I was watching these episodes that aired in the 70s. So it was the mid 80s watching this. So imagine my surprise when I saw what he looked like in the mid 80s. I was like, that's not my Elton. I was so
what did you imagine him as a little kid?
Oh gosh, well, I mean, he would come out in, you know, the pink jumpsuit with the rhinestones. I mean, he was like the human equivalent of like a Barbie dream house. He was just my dream come true. Yeah. He was sparkly, he was funny, he was talented. You know, I mean, he was my dream guy. I mean, 3-year-olds don't need a whole lot.
No.
No. From a crush, you know, but being sparkly and talented and funny was absolutely enough for me. And he had weird teeth and an eyebrow that kind of wiggled as he sang. Like, that was all I needed.
I love Elton John.
I know. I loved him so much. And then imagine my further disappointment a few years later when I discovered that it would never happen between us.
Ever. Not a million years.
No. So that was
what do you play? Like, you're a musician. What do you play?
I did start out with piano, but I also play ukulele. I picked that up about, I think 9 years ago. And that's kind of been sort of my main instrument, just mostly because it's so portable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not every venue I play has a piano for me to use. And the keyboard I do have is just enormous. Like, I wouldn't be able to travel with it by myself. So the ukulele is super portable. I taught myself how to use it within a few weeks. And also, I got a sponsorship from an awesome ukulele company, Lonnie Cry. So, so I have these beautiful instruments. I mean, it's you know, I know a lot of people think of ukulele and sometimes they think of like a toy or a souvenir picked up in Hawaii or something. And the ones that I have, though, they're bigger, they're more robust. You know, one of them has 6 strings, one of them has 5 strings. Wow. And they're just really...
You can have a 6-string?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they still have the same tuning, the 4-string tuning, but some of the strings are doubled up. So it's a little louder, has a little bit of presence. And I really like that because not only do I do solo shows, but I also sing with a band. And sometimes the band is up to 8 pieces with horns. And so I have to be able to hold my own during those big shows too. So that really helps to have like just more presence overall with my instrument. And, also I'm a singer. I studied jazz and classical singing in high school and college. And now even my original music still kind of has those jazz undercurrents, but I think secretly I always wanted to be like, you know, Gladys Knight. In high school, I got really into Chaka Khan. So, you know, the soul singing and whatnot. But I mean, really, it all, you know, it all really comes from the same place. And I make absolutely no bones about it. I tell people, you know, I wouldn't be the person I am or the musician I am without African-American music. Like, it's just a fact. And I mean, American music wouldn't be American music without Black musicians and innovators. So
yeah, the harpsichord still.
Right. Yeah.
No, like, country music.
Right, yeah. I mean,
no. Country music.
There would be no country music.
For blues,
Even,
you know, people don't realize, they think of, you know, oh, what's white music, what's Black music, and what's white instruments, and even finding out, like, the banjo came from Africa originally. You know, I found that out doing little research, because my office, actually, what I love about my day job is that it is a very diverse workplace, and we had this amazing celebration for Black History Month, and thank goodness it happened before COVID shut everything down and we're all working from home. But I actually did do like a display for our celebration of like Black music. And the first picture, and it was this painting of like a banjo player teaching his son or grandson the banjo. And that's kind of where it started. And I went through, you know, soul music and jazz and, you know, up through like Earth, Wind, and Fire and Prince and Chaka Khan, and then rap, you know, got to like, you know, the Sugar Hill Gang, Run DMC. So it's like, you see this evolution, and it's just, it just blows my mind. Like, there wouldn't be music here.
Yeah.
In America without.
It's like a fringe theory, I guess, but there is a, not a conspiracy theory, but there's some belief that Beethoven might actually have been Black. They
really?
Actually think his parents, one of his parents is from where the Moors were from.
Oh, okay.
And so they think that you might have been Black. And also part of it is because he changed the way classical music was being done. I'm trying to remember exactly, but there was something about the rhythm, the 2-4 rhythm that he started doing, where everyone else was working like more waltzy type, like different downbeat. He changed the downbeat. And once he did that, everyone started doing it. So Beethoven or I'm trying to remember, I think it was Beethoven.
Mozart?
Then I was like, was it Mozart? But it was something about, it was one of them that only has like, there's actually only a couple of actual like drawings of them. Mm-hmm. And people have actually suspected these actually might not be him.
Kind of like White Jesus.
Yeah. Yes. So it's interesting. Like,
White Beethoven.
If that ends up being true, that means white people made no music.
Like, ever.
It's all from Black people. Yeah. I'm not even joking. Harpsichord, it ended. It ended with That's the harpsichord.
Done. Yeah. Fine. Turns out that actually came from a Black guy, too.
Do you remember the first, like, your first performance? Like, the first time you performed?
Kind of. I mean, I'll admit, I grew up in the church, so, I mean, I don't remember exactly the very first performance, but, I mean, they had us up there on stage singing at Christmas time and everything. But I think my first solo performances, where it was really about, you know, I'm in the spotlight, was probably middle school, not only at church, but at school as well. The funny thing is, I actually never took choir because I always wanted to do the other electives, because it was like, either you do choir or you do all this other cool stuff like art and woodshop and whatnot. And I actually had intended on focusing on a career in more of the visual arts, like painting or drawing and things like that. But when it kind of came down to it, when it came time to choose what to study in college, I did choose music, and I don't regret that at all. There are things I learned going to music school that I probably wouldn't have learned on my own. And, you know, I don't know, I probably would end up just as, you know, I would have ended up on just as poor of a path if I wasn't an artist anyway. I'd still have to have a day job and whatnot. But,
right.
you know, I'd probably spend just as much money on supplies and gear, but you know, it's just, I don't know. That's just how it ended up working out. So I, instead of taking choir in middle school, I took the art, more of the artsy visual arts electives, but I did, which is so ridiculous. I did audition to be in a musical in middle school, and I did an abridged version of this song, but I kid you not, I walked in there and did an a cappella version of Bohemian Rhapsody as well. Musical. I cut out a lot of the middle part, but I did really belt my little 13-year-old heart out. And I was so disappointed because I knew going in that there was this one girl, this one particular girl who they really wanted to be the star of the production. But the problem is she couldn't sing. Like, she really couldn't sing. Mm-hmm. And I walked in there and I was like belting out, you know, Bohemian Rhapsody. They ended up turning it into a play. Instead of doing a musical, they just did some one act plays, and because they wanted to
cast her. So they could cast her.
Yeah. I didn't end the same play. Yeah.
Scandalous.
Wow.
It was a pretty big bummer. To this day, as much as I love musicals, and I used to go with my mom to the Fifth Avenue like every month because she had like season tickets or whatever. We went for years, and I love musicals. I've never been in a musical. So.
Oh, really?
So, I know it's not.
What are you going to do about that? You've got to produce something. So that you
can, I know. I feel like I honestly just have to write my, I've just pull a Lin-Manuel Miranda and just like write my own musical and star in it.
Big secret. Hopefully he's not listening. He can't sing too great.
Yeah. So I mean,
and he started his own thing. Listen, he wouldn't have gotten cast in that if he hadn't
been produced.
Right. Yeah. So and hopefully I have a little bit of an edge that way.
Yeah.
And I can write music and arrange music for other instruments and whatnot. So I figure I better get started.
You're halfway there. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Do you remember when you first decided that you wanted to like pursue this in any way?
Music?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I studied it in high school and in college. I even got a BA in music.
But I mean, was there a moment, like, what made you go, like, I'm going to go get in music? Like, was that just always thought you were going to do that? Or,
you know, I wanted to. I think after college, though, I was really, really jaded about actually finding a career in music. Because a lot of my friends were going into teaching. And I have to admit, at that point in time, you know, at age 22, I really didn't want to be a teacher. Yeah. You know, I wanted to play music and get some more experience before, you know, essentially just going and regurgitating what I just learned to other kids. Like, that just didn't really appeal to me. So I wanted to pursue music, but then, you know, thrown out into the real world, there were bills to pay and medical emergencies and toxic relationships and things like that that really got in the way of pursuing it as a career. And it really actually took getting out of some very bad situations and even an abusive situation for me to finally have the physical, emotional, and mental space to say, you know what, it's time. You know, actually, I was 30. I had just turned 30 and I was living back at my mom's house because I had to leave where I was at because of this abusive situation. And I thought, you know what, this is it. This is the time is now. Like, I'd written a bunch of new songs that helped pull me out of, you know, pretty dark depression and whatnot. And I thought, it's time, you know, age 30. I'm like, it's time. I know a lot of those pop stars, they start out as teenagers, you know, like Billie Eilish is like young enough to be my daughter, for goodness sake.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, you know, gosh. But I just decided the time is now. It's time to finally do what I want to do and not just be, you know, just surviving or trying to help someone out with all of their problems. It's time to finally do something for myself. And I have to say, I don't regret it at all doing it later in life because I think now I have a lot more to say. And that's the other thing with the age issue. You know, people seem to worship, you know, the young and beautiful, young and hot and whatever. I said, you know what though? I feel like I have so much more to say now that I'm older and I've been through some ish, you know, a lot more experiences. You know, things that I wish someone would have said to me when I was younger. So now I'm trying to use this new perspective now to help other people too. So, you know, yeah, I don't regret that my music, that my debut album came out when I was, you know, 31. And I used to joke, I'm like, oh, well, maybe it should be my farewell album too.
Oh my God. Right.
It's crazy to me.
The age thing is ridiculous. Yeah. You know, I hate to sound like a meme, but we need to normalize like people just doing shit when they're over 35. Like,
exactly,
just over 30. Like, it's insane. Like, well, if you become by the time you were 22, then it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I see it more in like in acting is where I see it ridiculous. Like, I see
entertainment,
it
in, any see kind it of music. Entertainment.
I see it in music. It's like. And it's like, well, there's no reason why somebody can't be older and singing. It's singing. Like, you can like it. I don't like when I hear teenagers that grew up in the suburbs with no problems singing about their pain and heartache, right? Like, right. What have you done? You haven't done anything yet. You're on Disney Club. That doesn't matter.
Yeah, but like, Kyle didn't take me to the dance or whatever.
He
was texting another girl.
Right.
In movies,
who is that hoe he was sending emojis to during homeroom?
Like, if you remember,
I can't imagine.
Batman Begins. What? Come on. You saw the Batman.
I saw none of them.
You saw none of the Batmans, the big Batmans that came out?
The one with Michael Nolan? Keaton?
No, the Christopher Nolan.
Oh yeah,
Christian Bale Batman.
I live under.
They
a
had
rock.
Katie Holmes playing a district attorney, and she looks. Oh, 17,
I did see that one.
Right, yeah. She looks 17. Yeah.
That's just her face.
But you're looking at her, and you're like, you don't look like you're a DA. And I think in real life, she wouldn't have been old enough to be a DA. Like, and I just it bothers me that there's so many women who could have played the role and looked like it. Mm-hmm. But that they go for someone that's they're young and let alone not even the young and cute part, but just that they're young. Like, but it makes no sense sometimes.
Yeah,
you have to. You can't get your PhD at 18 unless you write that into the whole thing that they were like a Doogie Howser, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's preposterous, and I grew up. Because I'm old. So I grew up on all these movies that people looked like adults that were like the news reporter that's been grinding it for 10 years, you know, 20 years. It's okay to cast a woman in her 40s in a movie.
I think it's what I see, at least, is people, you can be in your 40s, you can be in your 50s, but you have had to have been in the industry for 30 years. You know what I mean? It has to be like, oh yeah, no, she's cool because I remember seeing her in this thing when she was 12. It's like, you can't just show up.
Yeah.
A newcomer at 40.
Oh
right?
Yeah, no, you can't just come into a role.
Right.
Right. You have to have tenure?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And you also can't go too early where you go crazy, right? You can't go.
I can't imagine like being an actor. I mean, like even now I feel like I'd be worried about like even literally now I'm like, am I going to say something stupid that I'm going to be like, oh, I don't know if I stand by that 6 months later. You know what I mean? Like, I can't imagine being actually young.
I say stuff now performing. That I don't stand by six months later.
Of course. Right. That's what I mean. Can you imagine being forming and like becoming whoever you are? And then like, oh yeah, they've got video footage of you saying and doing something.
Right.
Stupid.
And it's on the internet forever.
Right.
Oh my God. I was I graduated high school in 92 outside of Boston. I would have been canceled so fast with the backwards thinking that I grew up around. Like, it was just not. It's just so different now.
And yeah. I just can't, no, I mean, having room that, to grow is important. Yeah.
As a person, we cancel too quick. So, right. So you always wanted to turn 31. When was your debut album?
It was an EP of songs. Actually, the whole EP is called No Love Songs. There is a track on it with that title, but also it really was songs that were about heartbreak and loss, because I had gone through a heartbreak plus a domestic violence situation, and I was just in a really low point in my life just in general. You know, I'd gotten kicked out of my home. I mean, that never happened to me before, and ended up having to go back to my mom's house. And you know, I was just really not in the place I thought I would be at 30 at all. Because, of course, you know, growing up, I thought, oh, by the time you're 30, you're going to be married and have some kids and own a house. And here I was, you know, back at my mom's house with literally nothing but debt. I mean, the one good thing other than, you know, my mom's support and love, of course, was the fact that I did still have my job. So at least I was still working and had health insurance and things like that. I know it could have ended up being a lot worse, but still very dark time. And so I wrote kind of just a small collection of songs, and I whittled it down to the six that really fit together. Mm-hmm. And kind of told the story. And I put out this No Love Love Songs EP in 2014. So that was over 6 years ago now. And
so for a dumb person like me, when you say EP, what do you,
well, it stands for extended play. So it's kind of between a single and a full length album. Usually mm-hmm. a full length album would have a few more songs on it, maybe eight okay. to 10 songs. Although I have to admit, I'm working on a full length album right now and it's looking pretty huge. I'm trying to whittle it down from, like, you know, 14 tracks or something. Cause I'm like, do people really want to listen to this much music? But,
how do you decide what goes in? Like what fits together?
Well, part of it really is, kind of listening to it as a one big piece. Like I'm an album lover. I know that that's really kind of backwards from the way things are going now, with like people just putting out singles, just like one big song, one singles, big hit.
I want 15 seconds for TikTok. I don't even want to.
Exactly. Not even. Yeah, single. You're right. You know, they just want clips. They want like memeable. Right. Memeable. Is memeable a word? I don't know. But sure. They want like
it is now.
Yeah. Clips. And here I am. I'm someone who loves albums. I love having a whole story that you tell, and that kind of carries you through, you know, a selection of songs that are carefully curated. So I'm trying to be a better curator, because the problem is I have songs that I did write back in my early 20s that I still really enjoy now, and songs that I just wrote, you know, one I wrote last summer and literally sprung it on my band like a week before a gig and they nailed it. So that, hey, that's going on the album too. So it can be difficult to whittle it down to that ideal album. But yes, to answer your question, an EP is kind of like a short album, but, you know, longer than a single.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's it like working with a band? Like, how did you come about like pulling a band together, and like, who's the leader and who, you know what I mean? How does that all work?
I mean, I guess when it comes down to, well, first of all, my band's called Champagne Honeybee.
Okay.
I also do use that name when I do solo shows as well. Essentially, Champagne Honeybee is me and it's my project. I think I put on social media, it's like, you know, it's Ronnie Weatherby and her trusty ukuleles and talented backup band, or, you know, something along those lines. So people know that Champagne Honeybee, first of all, is me, but then also my ukuleles. That was kind of a big part of the beginning of Champagne Honeybee. It was basically just me playing ukulele and actually singing comedy songs. It started as a comedy group, my ukulele and me. And I used to, and I name all my ukuleles. So it's like this ukulele, you know, Lenny was the first one. It's like, Lenny's just as much a part of the band as I am. Like, it's a shtick, right? And I used to do comedy open mics and showcases and things like that. And that was like the very, very beginning. And then, you know, when my life went totally down the toilet, that's like when the blues came back in. But looking back on it, I think the humor actually also helped me get through some rough times too. You know, I mean, I was still in the middle of those toxic situations, but playing comedy shows, making people laugh, and that like really kind of helped me get through those times as well, to be honest. So that's why I'm so grateful to folks like Silas. You kind of, you know, still kind of save room for me within the whole comedy scene, because I mean, I still love making people laugh. I still love writing silly songs with like real stupid punchlines where people are like rocking out to it, you know? I mean, that is one thing I have to say. When you do musical comedy, it gives you a little leeway because people might be moving along.
Right.
Even if it's not the funniest song in the whole world, they're still like, oh yeah, that's catchy. I like that, you know? So
what would you say there's do you think there's any misconceptions people have about ukulele playing?
Oh, absolutely. I think I've heard so many people say that, you know, they kind of think of it as a toy and not a legitimate instrument, or that it's just, it's cute and it's only meant for playing, you know, cutesy, happy songs on the beach and whatnot. So when I get up there with a funk band and I'm literally playing angry, heartbroken, loud songs of this ukulele, it kind of, people are just kind of blown away by it. And I think that's really my favorite part of working with the band, is people don't expect that from a ukulele player. I think also sometimes, let's face it, they might not expect a woman to write and arrange for such a big group, which is actually kind of another part of my mission, is to show, you know, yeah, women can do anything. You can lead a band, they can write for it, they can arrange for it. They don't need help. In fact, I had people even ask me, like, who arranges, you know, your horn parts? And they're like, it's me, you know, it's all me, you know, I don't have someone, you know, behind the scenes who, you know, and I'm just the pretty face. I mean, somewhat pretty face.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Like, I'm not just the face of the group. Like,
are you one of the top Indian ukulele players?
You know, I
don't know any others.
I was gonna say, I may very well be the only Indian female ukulele playing funk band writer, arranger, lead singer. I might be. In fact, I have to say, it was really only up until a couple years ago, I really didn't even know any other Indian lady band leaders in town, and I finally met one and we were going to join forces, but you know, then now we're in the middle of COVID, so that hasn't happened yet, but we were going to, we had a show planned for May, but you know what happened? It's like, this year has been so sad watching gig after gig. I mean, you know, gig after gig just gets canceled. Now all my, you know, all my summer gigs obviously were canceled as well, but I had expected it. You know, we're probably around June. I was like, I'm not playing any of those summer concert series, am I? No.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't know. It's been an interesting experience, kind of being that unique. It can help you and it can also hurt you. It can hurt you when people don't know where to put you, don't know how to classify you or whatnot. I mean, I feel kind of like a chameleon. Like, I've played sort of over in the artsy, folky side of town, but I've also been on bills with like rock bands and bills with other soul bands and funk bands. So that's kind of good sometimes, but other times I think I also do get overlooked sometimes, just because people may have only seen me play jazz standards quietly in the corner of a restaurant by myself, and they haven't seen the whole huge band, so they don't even know. Right. They don't even know that I have this really powerful band, too. So last summer, we did get quite a few summer concert series types of gigs through, you know, cities and counties and whatnot. And so I did my best to get video and try to put together like a highlight reel, like, look
at what I can do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because I think what would hurt the most is if people just didn't know and underestimated me, you know, like, I mean, obviously nobody wants to be underestimated, but, so I at least, at the very least, want people to know what I can do, whether it's their cup of tea or not. It's like, whatever, but I just at least want them to know that, hey, you know, we're out, Champagne Honey Bee is out here. But obviously the 8-piece band is not always, you know, very transportable, if you will. Like, you know, when I went to India a couple of years ago, it was just me. Yeah. Of course, you know, I'm not going to bring my 8-piece band to India.
Wait, did you go tour?
I didn't tour.
Okay.
I did visit my birth city and I played a show there, which was really amazing.
That's cool.
Yeah, that was so beautiful and such a touching moment
for
me.
Did they know who you were coming?
Oh, they kind of did. I think it's because I had friends who were staying there in my actual birth city. Sorry, the lighting all of a sudden got really strange here. I had friends living there and one of them actually happened to be my drummer. Or one of my drummers, I kind of have a roster, but he let the consulate know that I was coming and that I wanted to play a show. And so they actually booked the gig for me, kind of like without me being there.
That's awesome.
And kind of connected us by email and made it happen. And some local press came. I had some interviews. I talked to some college students. It was just really neat. Like I almost felt like I had sort of a rock star welcome. That's back awesome. In the city that I left, you know, 35 years earlier.
Wow,
this was my first time back, and to be greeted in such a way. And in fact, toward the end of my trip, I think word had spread even more, and I ended up getting a cover story on the Calcutta Times. Like, it was just crazy. I'm like, got this picture of me and like my purple and gold sari being pulled around on a rickshaw. Like, here comes the queen. You know? So that was really remarkable, because I don't think without my friends already living there and having connections, I definitely would not have had that kind of a homecoming trip.
I hope that's in your bio, that you were on the Calcutta Times.
Gosh, I don't know. I really
sounds should. Amazing.
It was. And sadly, I already, I think maybe 3 or 4 days after I got back to the US is when it actually printed. So I did not get a printed copy. But I did find the digital copy and screen cap for my life, you know, to save it before it disappeared.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is this all very exciting? I feel bad. Like I've just been kind of rambling about.
No, that's fascinating.
I'm super interested. I've always wanted to like get more involved in music. And I play like Ode to Joy on this piano. We just got this super old jacked up ass piano.
Oh, everyone. Piano.
Everyone has one of those. Like whenever anybody says free piano, like just run in the other direction, because there's a reason that it's free.
So
it's in our house.
Does it have fiddles on it at least?
It has keys on it. It
just needs to be tuned.
It needs to be tuned. I have like the local guy who is our, who's like the piano expert, is also like our town mayor. And he's super sweet. He's just like, I think I can save this piano for you. And my husband and I are like, let's get rid of this damn thing. Because you know what I mean? He's just like, I don't know. I don't know if I want it anymore, but he's like, no, I can save it. I can like tune it for you. I can fix it up for you. I can make it like, it'll work for you.
It's just sounding like a really heartwarming movie that maybe kind
of, it really does. Right.
The mayor / piano tuner.
It's super sweet. Yeah. Helped us move it. Like it's just,
he's going to come fix it when you and your husband are at crossroads, and he gives some sage advice that you're like,
right.
Yeah.
And plays while playing a song. Point. Yeah.
Everything can be fixed. The piano, our marriage, everything.
It's the piano is really a metaphor.
It has to be, right? Yeah. Right. Here's this busted piano. It's a metaphor for something. 2020, the country. I don't know.
We have a free piano that, you know, cost me like $200 to move here or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
It's fine. Like a lot of them are fine. They just, when you have a piano, it's so hard to get rid of. Like you can't get rid of, like.
No. Yeah. Cause it's hard to move. Right. And you can't just pick it up and move it, because you're going to damage it if you don't move it the right way. And then it'll really be a piece of junk. Right.
Yeah. And so people are always wanting to just like, first they always go on sale. Mm-hmm. And slowly people are like, fine, just somebody take it. Will somebody take it? Because they're like, nobody will pay for a piano because there's so many free ones.
Yep.
Right.
I'm like, I'm paying for one unless it's a new one.
No, free piano. Every time I hear like a phrase, I always think, is that like a movie title or a band title or a short film title? Because free piano, I think, elicits a certain emotion in people, because most people have had either an experience with a free piano or like, you're like,
I want to write a film short now.
Right. I was just going to say.
Free piano.
Yeah.
Like, this is a great idea, Nicole.
This is our brainstorm session.
You're welcome.
Yep.
It's my life. Yeah.
The next podcast will be the table read.
The first table read for piano.
A heartwarming story of
redemption.
Brokenness turned to beauty.
Oh my God. No, I've already, and it's so funny because I'm such an outside in kind of person, like a superficial person. No, but I'm like showing pictures of like painted pianos to my husband. I'm like, look, we can paint it this color. He's like, yeah, it's still a busted piano, Nicole. Like,
it only has 5 keys.
I'm like, but we can paint it blue and it would be really cool. Put some plants on it. I don't know. This lady did it. Looks really good. No, I've always like wanted to play music. And so when you talk about like having a band, I mean, and Silas knows this with me, like with filmmaking, like that's my forte is like acting and filmmaking, writing and that sort of thing. But the idea of like communicating an artistic vision to other people to help execute it, like freaks me out and like stresses me out. I'm not really good at that.
It, you know what? I'll be honest. It is very stressful. And that's kind of another part of, you know, I guess learning to be a better band leader. I feel like I'm always learning because they'll teach me, you know, they'll let me know if, you know, maybe a way I'm communicating with them doesn't work for them. And then actually last summer, this old dog learned a very new trick. I downloaded some music notation software to actually make beautiful, nice printed sheet music of my arrangements instead of like my scrawled hand-drawn notes where they couldn't, sometimes they just plain couldn't tell what note it was because like I just made them too big and whatever. Right. So I learned how to use this program called MuseScore because it's free. But it also came with a learning curve. And I actually, one of my bandmates actually had me over for a whole afternoon, just kind of showing me the ins and outs of the program. But I tell you what, by the end of the summer, all the songs we were playing had these really nice looking, you know, sheet music for every song. And they appreciated that so much. There was no more guesswork or kind of squinting and wondering what on earth I meant to say there. So, I mean, it's like I said, it's being a band leader is still a learning experience. I feel, in fact, I think just being a musician in general is a lifelong learning experience. Like I'll never stop being a student of music. And I learn from, you know, my bandmates and other friends and musicians who inspire me. So, you know, I my music education definitely didn't stop when I got that degree, you know. Yeah. So
right.
I mean, it was a good foundation, it was a good start, and I definitely don't regret it because I did learn, you know, some certain things that are helping me now. But I'm still learning, and you know, it's humbling. It's really humbling, I think. Yeah. And I think you could probably say that for any type of art though, for acting or writing or anything like that. You know, you just keep learning. You know, especially as you meet more people. That was the other thing. When I first got into the music scene, I really didn't know a lot of people. And as I met more people, that actually helped my music grow. You know, meeting horn players and saying, okay, I'll write for horns. Meeting string players. And now I'm like, okay, I'm going to arrange for strings. You know, just I feel like the bigger you build your network, like they're building you up too.
Mm-hmm,
you know
mm-hmm.
what I mean? I mean, oh no, now we really sound like an after school special.
No, but it's so true. I mean, like these are the things you don't learn until you actually do it. You know what I mean? Like those are the things, some of the things you can't learn in school.
Exactly. You know? And I think, you know, and honestly, I think that was a huge reason why, you know, like I said, at age 22, I wasn't ready to be a teacher. Like what did I have to teach anybody? You know, I mean, other than what was just literally told to me 5 seconds ago. So, I mean, I think now I'd be more open to it. Open to being a teacher, but I actually do every once in a while do like online workshops and things like that. Like I actually just did Rain City Rock Camp last mm-hmm. month. And I think I mentioned it earlier. I did it over Zoom.
Yeah.
And the kids knew more about it than I did. That was very humbling, bordering on embarrassing. But you know, it was fine. I actually broke up the tension by bringing out my baby Yoda doll and having him play the bongos. And so, you know, that kind of got everything back on track.
That's awesome.
Like, bring him out.
Pull out baby Yoda.
Yeah, exactly. That got their attention.
So. Okay. Ronnie, before we let you go, I know you've been on the show before, technically for the live show, but we didn't have this segment then. But this is usually the first time people are coming on now. There's seven questions we ask, the world famous seven questions.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So these are for you. So there's no wrong answer. Just, you know, however you want to answer.
Blurt it out.
Yeah. What are you most nerdy about?
Oh gosh. Honestly, probably Prince. I mean, to the point where I would make sure if I was dating somebody, I had to let them know pretty early on about Prince because I didn't want to scare them later.
Right.
With my obsession. You know, and
a purple shrine.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they get to see the t-shirt collection, which takes up a huge dresser drawer. They'd have to see the posters, which actually, sadly, a lot of these things are in storage or even at my mom's house, you know, my second storage unit. But yeah, I would say I'm pretty nerdy about prints, and it may have frightened a few people, but it's okay. If it frightens you, then you're not meant for me. So bye.
Bye. Okay. What's something that you love to eat?
Ooh, well, this probably sounds super cliche, but Indian food. I do love Indian food, but really just in general, I love spicy food. And I have since I was little. Like I think I said, I told you I was adopted. And my mom is a white lady who did not grow up eating any kind of spicy or even all that flavorful of food. But ever since I was really tiny, I'm like, Mom, please. Like, I need, I wouldn't even tell them, like, I need ethnic food. Like, in other words, like, you know, this bland white people food is not doing it for me. Like,
it's just, knew even then you were like, my palate needs, it needs more.
No, it's absolutely true. I, anything, whether it was Vietnamese food, Chinese food, and actually now I'm a huge fan of Korean food. I cook a lot of Korean food as well, but gosh, I needed it. I needed the spice. I needed the flavor. Need the flavor.
The flavor.
Yeah. So that's what I like to eat. Food with flavor and spice.
What's something that you love to drink?
Drink?
Yes.
Mostly tea and water. I really don't drink much alcohol, rarely ever. But I do love tea. In the morning, I like an Earl Grey. But I also do drink a lot of like iced chai this summer because it's been so hot. So I'll just brew a lot of really strong chai and keep it in the fridge and then, you know, add milk and ice and a little whatever sweetener I feel like having and have myself a little iced chai latte. So I don't even need a Starbucks.
Just that's a good idea.
But I've been home. It's so cheap. So
yeah. Cheap.
What kind of music do you love?
Do I love? I guess I kind of talked about it before, but like jazz, soul music,
Prince,
yes, kind of all of those things. Prince, yeah. So I'd say anything, you know, I'd say anything really that has like a good groove to it, insightful lyrics, things like that. So, but yeah, Prince.
Okay. What do you love to create?
Honestly, aside from music, that's kind of a given, obviously, but I love to cook. In fact, I found so much comfort and solace in cooking during this pandemic, even more than I have with music. In fact, I mean, I hate to say it, but I haven't been feeling super inspired or creative during this pandemic. I've just been kind of focusing on the day to day, but cooking, cause I mean, you gotta eat, right? And I don't really feel comfortable going to restaurants just yet. So I've just been cooking up a storm, and really I love cooking, either trying new recipes or creating new recipes. So if you follow me on social media, like it's so funny, my Instagram was going to be for music only, but right now there are so many food pictures on there. Yeah. So if you follow Champagne Honeybee on Instagram, you're going to see music clips and, you know, stuffed zucchini blossoms and Korean fried chicken bites and random things like that.
That's okay.
What's a game you love to play?
A game? Gosh, you know, I'm not much of a game person, but one game I really liked when I was a child, actually, I really liked board games. I mean, fully admit I am not very good at video games. Like I was one of those kids where I'd be playing and I'd be doing bad and I would hand my controller to my friend who was better and be like, ooh, get me really far. And he would see my neighbor. He would always take that opportunity because he essentially just got to play twice as much. But yeah, here, get me really far. So I wasn't very good at video games, but I did like board games as a kid, you know, anything from Candyland, Clue, Monopoly. In fact, you know, I know board game nights are kind of coming back and I'm all for it because I think it's kind of fun and it's a way to socialize. And I know video games are too, but I don't know. It's just more chill, I think.
Mm-hmm.
until people start throwing pieces together. The Monopoly rage. You know?
Yeah, right.
Okay, and last question. Mm-hmm. In 100 years, when someone reads your biography, what do you want to be remembered for?
Honestly, I've thought about this a lot. I want people to remember me as a songwriter. You know, as much as I enjoy people complimenting my performances or my voice or whatnot, I want to be remembered as someone who wrote original music. Mm. So, yeah, like Ronnie Weatherby, you know, composer or performer, you know, something like that. Something along those lines. We can put it in a textbook.
Awesome. Ronnie, thank you so much for coming here today.
Thank you for having me on. I know we've been basically talking about this since last year. Yeah. So I'm glad we finally made it happen. Wonderful to meet you, Nicole.
You too.
Can connect again, maybe get to know you a little better.
Speaking of connecting, where can people find you if they want to follow you or your alter ego?
Well, as I not so subtly said earlier, Champagne Honeybee is my band name, and you can find me on Instagram under Champagne Honeybee, also Facebook. I do keep my Facebook page pretty music oriented, but Instagram, it's anybody's guess. You might see some food and some cosplay because, I guess that's another thing I'm nerdy about. I do like to cosplay and stuff like that. So yeah, there's all kinds of good stuff on my Instagram. You should follow it. And also my Facebook page too, I guess, if people are still doing that. I just feel like I'm not that cool, and I don't know what's hip.
You're totally cool.
What's hip with the youth these days?
Who cares? You know? Fuck them.
They don't spend money.
No.
I mean, I'll admit, I have like a TikTok account.
A TikTok account?
TikTok?
The space in between made me think that you're like TikTok?
TikTok?
TikTok.
TikTok, yeah. It's for the young people.
It's for the babies.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. It's all good. Do what I can on the social media. Oh, and I actually do have a website. I guess I forgot about it because I don't update it all that much anymore, but you can find me at champagnehoneybee.com as well. And the YouTube. I'm on the YouTube. On the YouTube. There are music videos and live videos and yeah.
Okay. Well, hey, thank you so again. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for Nicole for dropping in.
Lovely, lovely.
Okay.
Come really back. Happy to be part of the Black and a Half family. I'm not really black or half.
Well, nobody thinks I am either.
Live long and prosper.